We at Screenfish believe that we are all created in God's image and want to show our support where we can to those in the black community who continue to battle against systemic racism. While our team strives for diversity, we can always do better ourselves in giving voice to those who need the chance to speak out and be heard. In our new series, Films in Full Color, we will examine films that explore issues specifically within the black community. For each episode, my co-host will be Jordan Toms, pastor of Warden Underground Church in Toronto, and our hope is that through the lens of film, we might be able to shine light on the issues faced every day by African Americans. This week, Jordan and I welcome film analyst Chris Utley to the show to talk about justice and its relationship to hopelessness, and what it means to tell a new story through Destin Daniel Cretton's Just Mercy. So welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome back to Screenfish Radio. We're so glad you could join us this week as we continue on in our new series called Films in Full Color, where our hope is that through the lens of film, we'll be able to address some of the issues going on in black culture in light of recent conversation and protests against systemic racism. With that being said, I'm thrilled to welcome back my co-host for this series, Jordan Toms. Welcome, Jordan.
Yeah. What's up, man? I'm good. I'm happy to be back, ready to get into this one.
Me too. And this week, we're thrilled to have back my friend and film analyst, Chris Utley. Welcome back, Chris. Love having you on.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad you could join us.
A little more subdued than normal because of the times we're in right now. So, perfect time to discuss this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With that being said, the movie we are talking about this week is Just Mercy, a reminder that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But Just Mercy tells the story of Brian Stevenson, who, after graduating from Harvard, heads to Alabama to defend those wrongly condemned or those not affording proper representation. One of his first cases is that of Walter McMillan, who was sentenced to die in 1987 for the murder of an 18-year-old girl, despite evidence proving his innocence. In the years that follow, Stevenson encounters racism and legal and political maneuverings as he tirelessly fights for McMillan's life. Just Mercy was directed by Destin Daniel Cretton and stars Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx. Oh, and Brie Larson as well. I almost forgot that was Brie Larson. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, what is your initial thoughts on Just Mercy?
All right, yeah, so for me, first initial thoughts was I had mixed emotions about a lot of things because of how something that was a story of the 80s and all the, you know, all the movements, all the rallies, the protesting, the people within the system fighting for change, going about and trying to fix these things that are unjust. And you look at what's going on today right now and it's the same stuff. And it's like, you know, how far have we really come from these things? And so I think the movie does a great job of highlighting and pointing out the flaws of the system. Like when you look at Queen and Slim, you know, you what we talked about last week, and you look at the police brutality and then the response of Queen and Slim on the run because they don't want to go to the system and deal with the things of the system for fear of what will happen. This movie highlights why they ran from the system. And what will take place while you're going through the system and all the restrictions, all the boundaries and things like that that are put in place to put you at a disadvantage and put you and put, you know, black people, the majority of black people still kind of enslaved through mass incarceration and not have proper representative further cases in order to fight for their freedom. And so I thought this movie did a great job of highlighting that and kind of taking the audience through what that looks like and the hurdles and the resistance and things like that that go through in these cases. Now, I understand that all cases are not like this, but I believe that the majority of the cases go through similar things, and you're seeing that now. So it'll be interesting to kind of highlight certain things and scenes and talk more deeply about, you know, certain things that have happened. But initially, just generally, when I look at the overall way of how the movie goes, those are some of my initial thoughts when I think about the movie in its entirety.
Yeah, this is a great one. I'm a great one to follow Queen and Slim for sure. I like you pointed that out, because it does sort of point to, or it seems to point to, the why when Queen and Slim picks up. I mean, Queen and Slim does address it, but this lets you see it in a different way. Chris, what do you think?
I saw it in the theaters when it got wide release, because they tried to make an Oscar run for it, because the acting performances, of course, were dynamic and some of the best work Jamie Foxx has done since he won his Oscar for Ray. However, I thought the film was milquetoast. I thought the film was bland, and not that I was necessarily bored by it, but it's the same reason why I am tired right now. Because in my own, I would say, now that we are in this situation, ignorance, the champion call for Just Mercy was given by those, the film itself and Bryan Stevenson's work and all that has come out of this motion picture. The folks who rallied behind it the most were those who we would classify now as allies. And the reaction that we saw was that of allies saying, wow, this is unjust, this is heartbreaking, I want to get on board, I want to support, my eyes are open, I see. But my reaction, honestly, was been there, done that, having had this be a part of my individual narrative for 47 and a half years, and my collective narrative for 400, my initial response was, I'm ready for another story about Black people. Just to keep going to the theater and to keep seeing the same charade of unjustness and lawyers trying to do everything they can to help us beat the rap for a crime we clearly, obviously did not commit. I was just done. And I have a good friend who I bounced movies with, who's an African-American woman. And she saw it, and I told her the same reaction. She's like, you know what? You're exactly right. We did not know George Floyd was coming. By the time this got released, the Ahmaud Arbery situation might have been taking place. For those who don't know, we're just uncovered of this event in May, but it happened 2 months earlier. So, sidebar on that. But we did not know that we were headed for this season in this point in time. And now looking back at it, it's almost like God was being prophetic and trying to prepare our hearts for what was coming by this particular point in time of releasing the film. So I now got to go back and revisit it from a different set of eyes and a completely different lens now that we're on this other side of history.
Now, one of the things you said there, Chris, is that the target audience of a film like this were the allies.
The target audience was Black folk. But the allies were the one who championed it and said, it must be seen, it must be seen, it must be seen. And the collective outcry from my world with the brothers and the sisters was, why? We've seen this before. The low box office, hence the tepid mass audience response. This is not one of those ones like other films that became a grassroots thing and ended up grossing, $5 million a week for like 8 weeks. The next thing you know, it's got like $100 million and nobody knows where that came from. I'm checking IMDb right now. If you just look at box office figures, pardon me, y'all, that is the film analyst in me. Its domestic grosses only topped out at $36 million.
Really? That was the domestic? Yeah. $36 million.
$25 million budget, $36 wow. million gross domestic, worldwide, $50 million. Which means a lot of people saw it. Those who saw it did not care enough to really push it and champion it on this level. Now, Warner Brothers, in light of what's going on, this the film is now available on all streaming platforms for free. So, what's going to happen in the timing of this podcast, a lot of people are going to go back and watch it, and a lot of us are going to go back and rewatch it. I'm one of those people who will go back and rewatch, probably with my wife sometime this weekend.
Well, it's you said this is a story that's been told so many times then. Maybe the question for both of you.
Not necessarily this story.
No.
But the entire narrative of black man unjustly in prison for a crime that he didn't commit it, that he didn't commit, takes whip snap lawyer who bends the law, not bends, but looks at the law from all angles that he can to get this man free. That's a myriad of movies, and that's a myriad of news reports. And like I said, I was done. I thought I saw it all. But then, here we are today.
Well, maybe the question then for both of you then, having said that, is what does it mean to tell a new story? What do you guys think? I mean, Jordan, what do you think about what Chris was saying there?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel where he's coming from. And, you know, like I've had this conversation plenty of times, especially recently with the George Floyd and the Ahmaud Arbery and the Breonna Taylor with so many people. I mean, even tonight, I'm doing like another kind of online streaming thing podcast with a different group to talk about these things. And you know, seeing these videos, these clips and all this stuff, like, at the beginning, when I first seen the George Floyd stuff, like I was just angry for like 3, 4, 5 days and distant, just in my house, and had a lot of feelings and emotions come over me that I hadn't felt in a while in terms of acting out in violence. Like usually, you know, I'm pretty reserved. I can control how I feel and know that being violent is not the answer and that's not the way. But sometimes you just feel like, again, and that's the only way to kind of be heard. And if not, then at least I can do something that will channel my anger and get the ears and the eyes of people to see what I'm doing and why I'm doing these things, you know? And so the way that he's feeling now, that's how I felt too when I first watched 12 Years a Slave. I was just like, it's just another slave movie about blacks, you know what I'm saying? And I was just like, man, we don't need to see this anymore. Like, this is not the only thing that is part of black history. There's other stories to be told. There's other things you can highlight that show black people and black culture in a light that is not where we are inferior, you know, and where we are struggling and all of these things. And so I definitely feel where he's coming from and agree with what he's saying. And so when you talk about what's a news story that can be told, it's just like, a bunch of things come in my mind, because to me that sounds like really broad. Like when you're talking about what's a new story to be told, it's like, okay, like pertaining to what? So like, I don't know things. Yeah, right. You know what I'm saying? So like
I know exactly what you're saying, because when you're talking to me, Steve and I had this conversation over the years with Screenfish folks for like forever. Mm-hmm. Like, black cinema is lumped into the same genres. It's like, it's good movie, over-the-top comedy, historical document, and rising through tremendous adversity drama.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then add to that, hipster urban rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see when I look at Insecure, the TV series. That's the history rom-com. Just Mercy, the rising up through whatever, 12 Years a Slave, the historical thing. Good movies, speak for themselves. Broad over the top comedy. That's your Chris Tucker's, that's your Kevin Hart's, that's your whatever. And so those are those five that our stories get pigeonholed into. Mm-hmm. And I would even add a sixth through the once promising, now absolutely embarrassing work of Tyler Perry. I'm getting in trouble saying that. See?
Yeah. I feel like that.
Because he started out, again, on a level trying to bring a Christ-centered perspective into African-American storytelling, which was great initially. But again, I'm a stickler about this as a film analyst, as a director, as a filmmaker. You're supposed to be evolving and growing and ascending to higher and higher and higher levels. It's stuff that's sunk lower and lower and lower and lower to me. And pretty much the Christian message is gone now. He's just doing him. So, I mean, God bless him. Now he's got his studio, his capital, his resources in Atlanta for open doors for a lot of folks to come film on his soundstage. It's a wonderful thing. But the storyteller in me and the storyteller that I am, I just have problems with all six of those. And the only filmmaker who consistently moves out of the box to give you something fresh, new, and different is Spike Lee. And it'll be interesting to see his film that's premiering on Netflix Friday, Five Bloods, what that's going to look like. In terms of, because like, he's consistently broadened the canvas of Black storytelling. Mm-hmm. Constantly outside the box, constantly outside the box, which is why he is so revered and rightfully so seen as, I'm going to just go ahead and say it, you can argue with me, Spike Lee is the greatest African-American filmmaker of all time. Nobody can touch him, past or present.
I will argue about that.
Yeah, I can't even debate that at this point. Ask me in 20 years after Jordan Peele has had a longer career, and maybe we can look back on it and see if the conversation evens out. But he's only got two.
I'm glad you mentioned Jordan Peele because that's another outside the box.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he just Get Out created a whole freaking new lexicon for America. Mm-hmm. T means something because of that dude. Funkin' Place means something. You know, but Get Out was such a game changer, and it's very disappointing to me that Us did not get that same level of recognition in terms of, I mean, because in terms of Us and Get Out, their box office was the same. Both of them did $175 million domestic.
Mm-hmm.
And he transcended just mere Blackness and Black issues with Us. Because if you recall, Steve, when we did our Us podcast, we were trying to bring in another individual, and they were squeamish about joining us because they didn't want to deal with Black issues.
That's right.
And when we saw the film, that story was a whole other thing. It just happened to be Black people in the lead. And you never saw that. You can put Us into a story like that and stretch and broaden that out. So in those two films, that's what Peele has been able to do. And like you said, it's going to be real interesting to see.
Part of me says, oh, we should talk more about Just Mercy. Part of me just says, we should just keep talking.
We can switch it back. you know me. You know me.
I love it. It's great.
Sorry, not sorry, but...
No, don't be, because this is good. This is important conversation. I mean, let's talk about the world of Just Mercy. I mean, are there issues in that story that you guys can relate to, that you connect with, that did hit you emotionally, or, like, what was your experience of the film?
Yeah, there's some things that definitely connect with me and hit me emotionally. One thing for me that really hit me when I seen this in the film or in the theaters as well. And then when it came out again, I watched it as well. But the scene with Herbert and the story of Herbert, oh, this guy fought in Vietnam for his country, came back home to America, wasn't properly treated for PTSD, but wasn't given the proper care for the effects that come with fighting in the war. And, you know, his brain and stuff is going crazy, and he's doing things out of what he experienced in the war. And some things are not safe. And so, you know, his story is he ends up, you know, committing a crime and killing someone in the process of doing that. But if he was given the proper resources before as a vet, that and knowing the effects and the statistics of what happens when you go to war and what that does to your brain and your mind, then that could have been prevented. But when he's ready to be executed and he's sitting in the cell with Bryan Stevens, and he says to him, I want to make sure I get the quote exactly right, but he says here to him, more people asked me how they could help me today than they ever asked in my whole life. Like, that really touched me. Here's a man, a black man in the 80s, and who fought for his country, he's doing these things, but hasn't received the things that he should have received as a vet, but also just not the opportunities as a black man in America in the 80s at that time in Alabama. And when people do reach out to him, specifically in this scenario, when white people do come to offer him help, it's to help him transition into being executed and dying. But where was the help prior to it? And so it's kind of that contrast of, you know, not receiving what he should have and not given the opportunities he should have. But when it's time for him to die, then they want to offer him help. And so that really hit me, like, wow. I felt just really saddened by that, angered by that, and a bit defeated, you know, to be honest. So that was one scene for me. There's others, but I'll let you guys go and share some stuff and then come back.
Chris, what about you? Anything in the film that did sort of, you felt like you could relate to, or that you felt really sort of hit you?
Jamie Foxx's character at that whole point in time just lost hope. And that's what's sitting in me right now. Hope I don't cry. But just these overwhelming sense of hopelessness and his dismissal of Bryan Stevenson, played by Michael B. Jordan, as he comes in. His whole attitude and spirit is, what in the world can you do against this system, this mindset, and this belief system that I have lived in all my life and all those who have come before me all my life? I mean, look at what they did to one person who was able to speak in my defense and how they trumped up charges on that guy. And to silence and muffle his voice. There's no hope. It's easy to say that the system is broken, but a minister friend of mine, very good friend, said this morning in his own Facebook Live, and this is the sentiment that Jamie Foxx's character was saying. I don't know, I can't remember the guy's real name, but his character was saying, the system's not broken. The system is perfectly designed to function the way that they created it.
Yep.
What in the heck are you going to do to put a dent in that and save my life? There's nothing you can do.
Yep.
And then in the initial to the midway point where Stevenson and Brie Larson's character are doing their work to try to get in and then and trying to get this done, and it gets denied for whatever reason. I don't quite remember the circumstances, pardon me. But he has that moment where they're escorting him back to his cell, and he defiantly fights going back in the cell. That whole, the spirit of rock bottom hopelessness. Or thinking about song 3, "Many there be who say of my soul, there is no help for him in God." Hmm. Tying that to what's going on today. That's why they're rioting. That's why they're taking to loot Target stores. You're bringing people so low in a system that others are sworn to defend and protect by any means necessary, even if it means cutting relationships with good people. That whole sense of hopelessness that he felt. The outburst with his son in the courtroom. Just that, you can't do this to me. This is my father. This is my father. This is my father. Just that whole spirit of hopelessness. I just sunk in the theater the whole time to say, excuse me, Steve. Damn it, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this. Mm-hmm. So the hopelessness really is just welling up. That depiction and expression of hopelessness. And contrast that against Bryan Stevenson's work and Michael B. Jordan's work to willingly submit to those lowest forms of abuse, of having to strip himself naked, just even go talk to his clients in the prison.
Yeah.
And how he could have responded in provocation, he could have responded by being sassy and quoting his rights, and he might have gotten killed in that moment. But he was able to humble himself and do that, to go be that angel of light for those men. I don't know if I could have done it. I don't know.
It's interesting that, you know, Chris brings up that first scene of when Brian and Walter meet for the first time, and just the hopelessness and the sense of defeat that he has. Like, this is the reality. There's nothing you can do. You're not different from any lawyer. I'm stuck here because this is how the system was created and designed, and I just got to take this on the chin, right, kind of thing. But in the first thing that Walter says to him when he sits there, or one of the first things, he says, the only suit that they want to see a nigga in is the suit I got on. Hmm. Talking about his jail suit, right? And he's talking about, it doesn't matter that you went to, what was the university you went to again?
Harvard.
Yeah, it doesn't matter you went to Harvard, you know your rights, you know all of these things. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter you can talk their lingo and those things. You're still a black man. They're still going to see you as that. They're going to look through your appearance. It's not going to do anything. And that's just kind of the sense of hopelessness and defeat that he had, that Chris was alluding to earlier. But when you talk about him, Brian, going around and trying to tackle the issues of the system, there's three times that I can remember that people let him know that what he's doing could possibly get him killed. And that's crazy to me. Like, when you see something that's unjust and that's wrong, that's faulty, that needs to be corrected, and you go about and addressing it and saying this needs to change, why is the response to be, we got to silence this person or kill this person so that it doesn't change, right? So his mom talked about it at first, right? You're going to go to Alabama, and I'm fair for you. You're going to be a black man down there. I don't want to see you killed, right? Then when he meets with Tommy, who's the state's lawyer, right? And he goes and he meets him in the office, and Tommy says, if you go digging in these wounds, you're going to make a lot of people unhappy.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to cover up something. Like, if you go about this, and like, we can clearly see that there's things that is wrong and that Walter is innocent, and we've done what we had to do to hide it and cover up and put him in that position. If you try to go to uncover it, you better watch out, because something can happen to you. Mm-hmm. And then that's the same thing that Ralph Myers said too when he met with him. He said, you know they'll kill you if you get to the bottom of this. So it's not even just that one person know or a small group of people know. Everyone clearly knows that the system is wrong and that there's faults and that this case is wrong and that Walter is free. But they've made their decision. They've put this man behind bars for killing, they accused him of killing an innocent white little girl. And so, and I thought too, oh, maybe the reason why, and this, I don't know if this is a, it could be a conspiracy or whatever, but I thought it was interesting that they tied his affair to him having an affair with a white girl, and then this girl ends up getting killed, and like 3 months later, they go and they arrest this man for killing the girl. I thought maybe that was their way of retaliating against him, because it was like a black man had an affair with a white woman at that point in that time. And it's like the movie talked about how the husband made sure to let the hotel know, the whole town and county know that this happened, right? And everything was fine with him. He owns his own business. He was good. There was nothing wrong. But then when an opportunity came, it was like, well, we can get Brian or we can get Walter for this, when they knew that he wasn't the one that did it. You know, and I thought maybe there was a connection there, but I could be way off whack. But that's some ways in this how the system works, right? Like, we can pin it on this person because
everything that you just described is the story of Emmett Till.
Exactly.
Everything that you just described is the story of the destruction of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Some interaction happened in an elevator that frightened a white woman. She went to tell her people. The result, they bombed a neighborhood. Go to Emmett Till. They beat him till he could barely recognizable, almost like Jesus Christ. And his mom had the boldness to say, no closed casket, open it up, let everybody see this. That outrage. Like I said, Steve, I'm just having trouble holding it all together in light of all this. Because all these years later, we're still on the podcast talking about these issues. And I'm in my own personal fight where I live in Texas trying to get people to care and listen and hear my cry. But nobody's listening.
How has the response been in Texas, Chris? You know, I know you've said a little bit, but
there have been protests in my individual city and in the larger metropolitan Dallas area that I haven't been a part of, but I have been using my social media platform to really speak and address this. And the response from my immediate spiritual community has been, with the exception of, I count maybe 4 responses that have been to me personally, the response has been to turn a deaf ear. And I was even told by my spiritual leadership that it's all right for me to share what I share on social media, but I need to use some discretion in what I'm sharing, because things are getting heated and they don't want to heat.
Things are getting heated in the church or online?
Yes, within, I guess, church members online. This whole situation and discussion is just getting heated. And so for me to try to diffuse the heat, it's best that I use discretion with what I share.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
Hopefully I can join you at another podcast and I'll tell you how this all turns out.
Of course.
It's interesting, too, that, again, Chris brought up people turning a deaf ear or not acknowledging what's going on. Because I felt like the movie did a good job of talking about that, too, towards the end when Michael B. Jordan, Brian's character, and Bree, I think her name was Ava, in the movie, but they're sitting on the bench by the water, right? And Brian goes, you know, this is a place where where they shipped black people here through this water. They were taken off the ship and sold as slaves, and then just a couple miles away from here, they were taken out of their homes and lynched.
Hmm.
Right? And he says, but no one ever talks about this. That this body of water here where he's sitting, no one acknowledges it. No one talks about that this is part of the history here in Alabama, that blacks were taken and shipped here and sold here and lynched here. And then the next, it's interesting, the next scene, you see him in the black church and they're all worshiping. Despite everything they've gone through, despite all the disadvantages, despite, you know, the struggle, being murdered, the injustices, they still have faith and they're still people of love and they're still like, we will overcome. But it was in the black church that felt that way. It was the black community. But it wasn't the broader communities. They're turning a blind ear to it, a blind eye to it. They're not really acknowledging it. So there are some people outside of the black community that are, you know, that do feel and are part of the cause. And Ava's character was that she worked with them, her husband supported it and stuff like that. But a lot of people don't want to acknowledge the police brutality. They don't want to acknowledge the faulty system and the way it was created and designed, and that it needs to be changed, and certain laws and amendments and legislations and section acts and all these kind of things need to be removed or changed because the way that it was created and so on and so forth. So I thought the movie actually hinted at that. And so when Chris brought that up now, I just kind of made that connection, like, yeah, that is true, and the movie also highlighted that in a subtle way, but contrasted it with faith and still hope in God, and we will overcome right after in that church scene.
Which is a response to Psalm 3 that I mentioned earlier. In spite of what people say, David declares in the cry of my people of color, black folk, we declare, thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of my head.
Amen.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm just in serious need of head lifting in this season right now.
Well, that takes back to the question of hope then, doesn't it? Like, I mean, that's one of the things you guys were talking about, hopelessness. And actually, there was a line in the movie that I wanted to get your feedback on, because I'll be honest, I've been trying to figure out what it means myself. But it's in the very last scene when they're speaking to the Supreme Court or whatever, wherever they are. I think they're addressing the Supreme Court. And Brian says, hopelessness is the enemy of justice. Hope allows us to push forward when the truth is distorted by the people in power. I understand the part about hope. I was wondering what you part or what you think of hopelessness is the enemy of justice. And what that would mean to you. I'll be honest, I'm having a hard time processing it myself.
That's the whole thing. Let's take it boots on the ground right now. Those men who shot Ahmaud Arbery, the officer who put his knee on George Floyd's neck, the one who stood by to keep the crowd away, and the other three who pinned his body down by his thigh and his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Justice would say, this is on video, send him up the river without a paddle.
Mm-hmm.
History has seen too much of not guilty, not guilty. And even in the Ahmaud Arbery situation, before the video got out, I don't know if you know, Steve, but that whole county did their investigation and they concluded there was no reason to charge the McMichaels for the shooting.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No.
They already investigated it. They already marked that case closed.
Wow.
The only reason why that got out is because their folks was sharing that video around And somehow that video got into the hands of other people, and here we go. But the narrative, getting back to the quote, is we want justice for these crimes that have been committed. When you have George Zimmerman still walking the streets for the assault of an underage child who was walking back from the store. When you have the officers who shot Lando Castile and Tamir Rice, now they're serving in other police districts. When you have the female officer who shot that man, she got found not guilty, and then she's back working. And you had this mindset that if you get Trump thrown charges, you beat the case, but you can just go to another city, and all of a sudden you get your job back, and you become an officer again. And let's go all the way back to the cop who had the foot on his neck in the 18 previous charges and reports brought up against him for brutality. And those previous 18 still let him get on the force and still let him be on that day to put his neck on George Floyd. That's hopeless. That's the narrative that our people have seen far too often. We want justice. Justice gets cut off. What are we left with? Hopelessness.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up the George Floyd again, and that situation with them coming to that conclusion that they weren't going to do anything to the officers involved with that until the tape came out and people rallied and protest, and then finally they got the...
Yeah, it was Aubrey Jordan, just to make it clear. To clarify, the only thing that happened initially to the George Floyd officers is they got fired. Yeah. And scrambled and put them on some third degree murder charge. Excuse me. Cop with the foot on the neck got third degree, but three other officers didn't get charged.
Yeah.
And so they took that out of the city's hands and they went to the state DA, and the state DA put the whoop on them. So all four of them charged. Now.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah, so it wasn't until there was like an outcry and an outbreak where they felt like, okay, we need to do something. If it wasn't that, nothing would have happened, right? And then eventually, it's interesting and it's very sad, but I just seen today that the main cop that had his knee on his neck, he just posted bail, so he's out right now. And this is what I'm talking about. Like, that shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't happen. Like, that's where, again, we feel hopeless. And it comes again. It's just, why is he being allowed to post bail? Why is he out right now?
And if we kill a man, black person, for the slightest infraction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also just seen...
There's no bail. There's no bail.
There's no bail. And so... To contrast that, this guy just murdered a man. It's on film. He posts bail. And then there's a guy who was a part of the protest, a black young male, who was peacefully protesting. He gets arrested for protesting. And he's in jail right now. They won't let him out on bail because they're saying he's a risk because he has a prior weed conviction. Really? You won't let a man come out on bail because he has a weed conviction? Will you let a murderer come out on bail that has been filmed, and this is part of the reason why people are protesting and rioting right now? How does that make any sense? Again, it's the system. It's racism. It's white supremacy, too. It just doesn't make any sense.
It does, but it doesn't. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel what you're saying there, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have it designed in your constitution that our value, forget about humanity, our value to even have a voice, our voting rights only amounts to 60% of a human's value. There you go. And none of this is a shock at this point. It's just people choosing to play ostrich.
Well, you know,
thank God, our eyes are rising up. Go ahead, Steve.
No, that's fine. Sorry, when you said play ostrich, that made me think of, like, there. You know, one of the things I thought was really interesting in the film, there are just a couple of subtle comments that are just made by different people around the town. Like, they talk about it being the hometown of To Kill a Mockingbird. And Bryan Stevenson goes in go to visit the DA, and, you know, when it gets uncomfortable, what do? They switch topic. You know what you really should do? Check out To Kill a Mockingbird. You should check out the museum. You should go there, because that's history, man. You should check that out. And there are just little things.
I'm proud of it.
Go ahead.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. And it's amazing to me because, like, and you guys can challenge me on this if you want, but I felt like those people weren't the problem, but they didn't know they had a problem. Because, you know, one of them was not, I'm not talking about the DA per se, because the DA is in the film is very much one of the villains of the film, you know, the opposition. But, like, what's the, his secretary in the film is the first one who brings it up. She's just trying to make conversation. And one of the things I see in that moment is it's almost like I'm just completely unaware of the situation, because she's not doesn't have a vested interest that I'm aware of. We don't really see that in keeping things under wraps. Like her, I think that's the only scene she's in the movie. Maybe if not, she comes in and says, you know, someone's here to see you, sir. Like, she's barely in the film, but that's the longest conversation she has. And to me, you know, there are certainly the people that opposed the ruling and opposed trying to investigate, but there were people too that were just completely unaware of the systemic problem in and of itself. You know, I was thinking this week of NASCAR saying that they're going to remove the Confederate flag. This is the news today or yesterday that they're removing the Confederate flag. And I thought, you know what? That's actually a good sign of awareness of history. Because you're not trying to erase that the Confederate flag from the history, but you are acknowledging there's a problem in it.
You're trying to erase the honor.
Yeah, erasing the honor, exactly. Which is the way I sort of felt about this thing. Oh, you should go check out the museum. It was an offhanded comment by the secretary. Now again, the DA reinforces it, but I felt like in a moment like that, I was like, you don't get what is going on. And there was, like, subtleties like that I did appreciate. Not because they were good, but because I think it showed that there were people there that just don't recognize it, that need to understand, but just don't. Because it just kept coming up. You want to check out that Mockingbird Museum? No, I'm really not interested in that. I really don't want to.
Because they're proud of themselves, because that's that mindset. It's like, you know, it's the same way of saying in Get Out when Daniel Kaluuya meets her dad and he pats himself on the back by saying, I voted for Obama twice.
Right.
It's abject patronizing that they're unable to see.
It's the same thing that I seen even on the Netflix American Son, right? Where Kerry Washington is there with the young white officer, and she's asking for where she can get a drink, and he tells her to go to the fountain, and he's proud. Oh, there's the fountain there for the whites and for the black. It's a history. We still have the plaque on the wall. It's just like, it's very ignorant, and maybe he's unaware. But it's like, why would you say that? Like, just tell her where the fountain is. You don't have to say, oh, you know, there's also the color one there with a plaque that, you know, commemorates what happened and what took place and so on and so forth. It's just like, it's insensitive.
Yeah. And now, in the case of American Son, that character is interesting.
Me too, because I've seen the film. So.
Oh, have you seen that one?
Nope.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
You know me and Netflix, although the pandemic is making me ease up off of that.
Well, you know, Chris, and I know we're not talking about this stuff, but now the Oscars have said that you don't need to be in a theater this year. So, I mean, now you just got to start watching your Netflix.
I know.
But American Son, I mean, is a fascinating little film for these sort of conversations. It's based on, it's basically a play. But that particular police officer you're talking about, Jordan, it starts off as ignorance, and by the end, I don't get the sense it's as much, it's as ignorant as we, you think. You know, you get to, you get the sense that he's more of a part of the problem. Like, when he first says that, you're like, dude, that's a stupid comment. Like, what are you talking about? That's totally ignorant. But by the end, and I know, again, he's not the primary character in the film, but by the end of it, I don't know about you, but I get the sense of, like, there's a character who knows a bit more about what he's saying than he really does in terms of racial issues, or is a little more self-aware. But maybe I'm wrong. But I mean, in this, yeah, in this particular film, like with the secretary, I just get the sense that she's just coming out of a culture that doesn't acknowledge it, and she just doesn't know what she's talking about. It's such an offhanded comment, but it really struck me. Because he's sitting there and he sort of looks at her like, why would I want to do that? But for her, it's like, oh, it's lovely. It's part of who we are here. It's part of our culture, you know? Well, I guess having said that, I mean, and maybe this is a stupid or a broad question. I don't know if it is. But I mean, the film is all about justice. It's talking about never too late for justice. Justice has been served. The opposite of poverty is justice. What does justice look like to you? What do you think it looks like? Obviously, in this film, it's justice is located primarily on the character of Walter McMillan. But what do you think justice looks like?
Due process of law. If I'm a citizen of the United States of America and you suspect that I have committed a crime, I have the right to be brought in peacefully, handcuffed, in court, to have my day in court, and to have all the facts, pro and con, presented against me, and under a fair and impartial jury of my peers, and peers does not necessarily mean human, I have the ability to have my day in court and to be found whether I'm guilty or innocent under the presumption that I am innocent until proven guilty. What is happening to our people is that right of due process is getting cut off for a myriad of reasons. Suspicion, biases, the running one with some of these police officers. In fear of my life, I struck an unarmed man 16 times. Just let me have my right to due process. And if you find, and if there are people who want to come to my defense and testify those facts, you don't go back and retaliate and dig up charges against them to try to punish them as a way to silence their voice.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with what Chris is saying. And I think I will just add, you know, fairness, equality, and truth. Like, you know, so you look at the case in this movie with Walter, and towards the end when they're doing the motion for the retrial, and you have the cop who stood up and said, no, the body wasn't found this way. I found it this way. So he was fired by the police because it goes against what they're trying to do, right? You have the other person come in and share their story that goes against what the state is saying, right? They try to silence them. They show all these things, the confessions. Oh, this person committed a crime. Ralph committed a crime. And so they put him on death row. And then so he changed his story. Like there was clear evidence of it being corrupted, that it wasn't right, that there wasn't physical evidence that tied him there. There was he had a community of people that can tell the state and the court that he was at he was with them at the time. You know, he was fixing his transmission. They're doing a barbecue to raise funds for the church. All of these things they just ignored. And when and in that scene, he points out everything that is wrong. Boom, boom, boom. It's clear that this guy is not, you know, he didn't do these things. It's clear that the evidence suggests that it wasn't him. There's nothing beyond reasonable doubt that should give him a conviction why he should be here. But still, the judge goes, oh, based on what I've seen and my interpretation of the cases, I'm reading over the files and so on and so forth. He's going back. He's going back. His conviction stays right until they bring it to the Supreme Court, and then they give him a chance for the retrial. But it's very clear that it wasn't like that. But still, right? That should be enough to overturn his guilty, his conviction. But it wasn't in that place. And how many times have we seen all over social media, right? I've seen this for years, and you see it a lot now because of things that's going on, where they'll have, like, you know, a black person or a white person, same, around the same age, same crime, but the outcomes is very different, right? So, oh, this person was caught with a firearm. This black person was caught with a firearm. This white person, black person, 22 years conviction, white person, community service. It's the same thing, even with the same judge. I've seen stuff. Oh, the judge brought up his past and how he was a great athlete, and he feared for his future, that if he got this conviction, it would mess him up, so he let him go. But the same judge with the same case on the black person put the man in jail for 25 years to life. Hmm. How does that make sense? There needs to be equality. There needs to be truth. Can't be different based on color of skin or the laws that is in place or just on the judge's ruling, especially if it's by the same judge in the same type of case. So, like, those things need to be addressed, ironed out, and those people need to be held accountable. But who are the people that, who's the ones that's holding these people accountable for that? I don't know who they are. If you guys know, let me know. But I don't know who those people are. Right? And so it's just those things. Like, why is it a different outcome for the same thing towards a different community of people? Or you see other things where it's like the same judge is there, and you have a man who raped, you have a white man that raped a girl. He gets 8 months in jail, then he's out on probation for a year. And then you see a black man that's caught with weed. The offense is not even as close to raping a woman, but he's in jail for 10 years. How does that make sense? These people need to be held accountable for this. This is not right, but it's constantly being let go. It's constantly happening. It's, you know, and that's part of, and that goes back to what Chris was saying, is why we in the black community just feel hopeless and defeated. And this has been happening. This has been happening. This is going on. It's going to happen in the future again. It's the same movie, just different people. It's the same outcomes, just different people.
And to bring everything back, that's why my initial reaction that when you asked me to come on this podcast to discuss it, that's why I thought my case was going, what I said was going, my take was going to be controversial, because I said, thank you for the allies who have galvanized behind the film. It's just another shining example of what's going on. But I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. Of this.
Well, I mean, I appreciate these conversations because, like, I don't even know how to respond. I can't respond. I just want to listen and support where I can. Is there anything else either one of you guys want to cover?
Take this time to bless you, because you have always been a champion of these discussions, and you have always been one who has been an ally and open to hear these and to discuss these within Screenfish. There's been a lot of hard conversations about stuff like this over the years, And I've done a lot of podcasts, as you know, on stuff of this nature and films of this nature, highlighting the African American experience with you.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much heat that you have taken from the white community per se for sharing and doing this, but you keep at it, and as you allow our voices to have space to share what we're going through, we are watching you grow, we are watching you learn, and I personally, not just as a fellow former question mark on that, we'll talk later, Greenfish compatriot, you, like I said, you've always been an ally, you've always been the champion. So, given what you've done to give us space to share is more than enough. So, thank you so much, Steve. And thank you, Jacob, your co-leader, for giving us the space.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Jacob's talked a lot about the heat over the years that he's taken for stuff he says. It's crazy to me. But thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that, Chris. That really does mean a lot. Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And Chris, I appreciate your words of encouragement. That means a lot more than you know.
You're welcome.
So we thankfully we're going to continue this conversation next week. Jordan and I are going to talk about waves and with Victor Stiff, who's been on the podcast quite a few times as well. So we're looking forward to that. Trying to think of what else. Oh yeah. As always, you can find us wherever you can get your podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. Find us here on your Alexa device via Stitcher, Podomatic. And if you go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More. I've been glad we could bring that back, which are designed to get the conversation started where you are about issues that really matter if you watch or with people you watch the film with as well. So, gentlemen, again, thank you so much. I love the conversation. They're hard sometimes, but I do appreciate your honesty, and I appreciate the chat with you. But as always, we started the conversation. This was Greenfish.